The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
And welcome, everybody. Brandon, I feel like a lot's happened in the last 10 minutes as far as how many people are in the room. Do we need to do the whole welcome all over again?
No, we're good.
Get out of here. You get out of here. Totally fine. If they miss that exciting moment of the welcome, that's just on them. All right. Excited to be continuing our study through the life of Joseph. Big thanks to Kyle Estep for teaching here last week. I was over teaching some at Spartanburg. And I just want to briefly mention how much I have loved having everybody around as 2020 has begun. We've been packing it out in here and in Summit Kids each week. And while we obviously don't judge our success in ministry by numbers on Sunday, we do acknowledge and love to acknowledge that gathering weekly is such a important piece of our community and our encouragement and our discipleship. And we live that out well as a group to the degree that you value it as an individual. We live that out together really well to the degree that you value it as an individual or as a family. And so I just want to say thank you for valuing it. Thanks so much for being here. It's been multiple weeks that we're even doing it right now, pulling chairs out of the back for people and that sort of thing. And we're going to keep, Lord willing, we're just going to pack it out until our new facility is ready up the road in downtown Simpsonville. Maybe this week if the weather holds. Who am I kidding? Listen. We are not behind, based on every meeting that I'm in with our architect and general contractor. I think that I can say pretty soon we're going to be behind because of this rain. And so just as we are praying and for the Lord's timing to get all things done, we appreciate you joining us in prayer in that regard, that things would get accomplished on his timetable. We have another church now who's already signed a lease on this space, and they're ready to move in. And so now I weekly get an email from the pastor of that church just also praying that we are on schedule. So, as a matter of fact, I do want to let you guys know this. I got a phone call. This church that's taking over our space here meets across the street at a Noah's event rental. And I got a phone call yesterday during the snow from the pastor. And he had found out the day before at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon that that place is no longer going to be in existence. And that this Sunday, as in today, was going to be their last Sunday in that space. Yeah, not the best thing to find out, especially when you're a set up and tear down church every week. And so his first phone call was to us, and hey, can you guys help us in any way, shape, or form? And so I do know this coming Saturday night, they'll be having their services here in our facility. And that may be the short-term plan for them, as they would ideally like to meet on Sunday morning and somewhere until this space is available to them when we move out. Turning Point Church is the name of the church. They are had the opportunity to meet the pastor and talk with him when I was pulling out one Sunday and I saw their banners over there. So we got in touch and able to take him out to coffee and hear a little bit more of their story. Scott's their pastor. And so as you think of Turning Point, that the Lord provide a space for them, we want to be good neighbors, provide what we can for them to meet. So they'll be here starting at least this week and maybe for the foreseeable future on Saturday nights. And I know you guys hear us talk about this all the time, like when we were doing the 135 offering kind of at the end of the year, blessing our ministry partners and stuff. And even in the facility expansion deal, where we're updating our facilities at all of our congregations, and so many of you have given above and beyond what you normally give to that, which we're so thankful for. But one of the things we've tried to articulate to you, because we know you're not here all the time, our spaces get used a lot. A lot of churches and ministries are using the facilities that the Lord has blessed us with, and we want to continue to live with our hands open in that regard. So be praying for Turning Point and them, and Pastor Scott and the crew there will kind of keep you updated. That'll mean a little bit of flexibility on our part. If there's another church meeting here on Saturday night, that has some ramifications for us walking in on Sunday morning. And so that we would be good neighbors and figure that out. And so we're looking forward to that over the next several weeks. All right. With that being said, question to start our morning. How many of you are strong dreamers? Show of hands. Yes. Okay. And by that, I mean when you sleep, you are usually dreaming. Like, there's lots of studies out now. You know, you can go and you can they can hook you up to some machine and they watch you all night long. Some of you have had this done at some point in time. There's lots of sleep studies that are going on. There's some debate on whether everyone dreams every night when they sleep or not. But I've talked with people through the years. I realize that some people dream like every night. Some never dream, or if they do, they would never remember their dreams. And then sometimes it just depends on whether you remember or not. So let's do real. How many of you are non-dreamers? You just don't really dream much. You wouldn't. Okay. All right. Always dreamers. I saw Kevin Kennedy's hand go up a minute ago. You're always dreamer. Okay. How many of you are sometimes dreamer? It just depends. Like currently, I've got some Sudafed going on. And so there's some dreams happening, people. Really happening. Growing up, in my early years through elementary school, I had a terrifying, reoccurring dream that always ended up with the Joker from Batman chasing me. We laugh now, I guess, but it was a nightmare. I just said it was a nightmare. You start laughing at me. So this is how the dream worked. Side note, did any of you have reoccurring bad dreams when you were kids? Oh, good, I'm not the only one. Okay, great, super. I never talked about it much with people, actually. this is how it worked for me every time. It wasn't every night, but on the regular. The Joker would be chasing me, and then in my dream, at some point in time, I start free-falling, that feeling in a dream where you're just falling to the ground. Now, here's how it worked. if I could wake myself up before I hit the ground in my dream, I was okay, other than my heart rate was really high, and then I would need to fall back asleep. If I hit the ground in my dream and then woke up, I was convinced for the longest time that the Joker was actually in my room, and that if I opened my eyes, he would kill me. This was my terrifying, so I don't know, we'll do some psychoanalysis right now. You guys want to get into that and try to figure it out? It's just crazy, isn't it? Now, here's some of the questions I get. Well, Jason, have you seen any of the Joker movies? No, none of them. I've never watched a single Batman movie or Joker movie. I've watched none of that, and I will not, because the Lord doesn't want you to be afraid. Anyway, today we're continuing our study through the life of Joseph. We're going to be talking about some guys who had some dreams, not about the Joker, but as we go through it, no less potentially odd and weird. And it's not the first time we've read about dreams in Genesis or in the story of Joseph. If you recall, Joseph was the first person we read about, actually, in the scriptures to have had a dream. Now, earlier in Genesis, you read about God appearing to people like Abraham in visions and dreams. But Joseph has a dream, and as we've discussed, he shared it with his dad, he shared it with his brothers. Things didn't go that well, to put it mildly. The brothers begin to plot to kill him, right? And then they decide, well, we're not going to kill him. We're just going to sell him into slavery. We're going to lie to Dad about it. We're going to tell Dad that he was killed. Before all of that played out, these words we read in Genesis 37, I just want to recap it for you. The brothers talking, they said, they saw, verse 18 of Genesis 37, they saw him from afar. And before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. So you might think, based off of that, that Joseph's a little leery of dreams of any sort, his own or others. And maybe probably, based on the past, he would just kind of keep things to himself, mind his own business. But here we are, continuing on in our story. And dreams, well, they're still playing a part of this unfolding story of God's providence and his promises. Before we jump in at the end of chapter 39, if you have your Bibles, you can turn there. That's where we'll be today. A little bit of a recap from where we left off last week. If any of you weren't able to join us, all of our messages are online at summitupstate.org. You want to follow along with us as we go through them. But last week, this is where we left off. We left off with Joseph being propositioned by the wife of his boss, saying no to her on more than one occasion, literally running from her. She makes up some lies. Joseph ends up in prison. Now, again, I don't want the familiarity of the story for some of you to miss this. from favorite son to hated brother to sold into slavery while being lied about to his father about his death, to be given more and more responsibility and leadership in his boss's home, only to be pursued by the boss's wife, does the right thing, lives with integrity and faithfulness, both to his boss and his God, only to be falsely accused and thrown into prison. That's where we are in the story so far. And this is what it says in Genesis 39, verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him steadfast love, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. Verse 23 says, the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Hit pause there for a second. How encouraging are these verses? The Lord was with Joseph. Where? Well, apparently everywhere. Because last week we saw that after showing up in Potiphar's house as a slave, the Lord was with him. And he was given more and more responsibility and leadership in the home. And that led him straight to freedom! Nope. Yeah, straight to prison. It led him straight to jail. And guess what? The Lord is still with him in prison and loves him. What great words. It says here that in prison that God showed Joseph his steadfast love. So I don't want to rush past that. Very important statement for us this morning. The Lord was with Joseph in prison and showed him steadfast love in prison. As a follower of Jesus, may the reality and truth of that statement and others like it all across the pages of Scripture sink deep into your heart and mind. That's my prayer for myself. It's my prayer for you as one of your pastors. And may it sink deeply, because if it doesn't, you will be tempted to think that the Lord is only with you when things are going well for you. And there are many problems with thinking and living from a place of your current circumstances defining whether or not you think God is with you and showing you love. Would it not have been so easy for Joseph to assume, I'm being given more and more responsibility here with my boss. Being sold into slavery, that was a bad deal, but God's really blessing me here. He must really love me because things are improving. Improvement in life, easiness in life, material things in life for so many people become their barometer for the nearness of the Lord, the care of God for you. And if that's the case, when you end up in places that you don't desire, that don't seem fair, right, from your perspective, are places that are just seasons of difficulty, when things are hard, you could be tempted to think that God has forgotten you, that he is not loving towards you, and you would actually miss out so much on this idea of the nearness of the Lord, his love for you, because you've convinced yourself that easiness and comfort are the primary indicators of his care. But once again, even in the midst of what had to feel like the continuation of the darkest of days for Joseph, we read what? Look back at verse 21 again. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in prison. And whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. You know, the story of Joseph does give us this great reminder that I think we all constantly need, that there is far more taking place in you and around you than you can see in the moment. There is far more taking place in you and around you than you can see in the moment. From our perspective, things continue to fall apart for Joseph. But the circumstances of his situation tell us that God is actually still up to something. Now for the second time, as a slave in his boss's home and now as a prisoner in the prison, Joseph does what? He grows in influence and he grows in responsibility. And what we can tell from reading this, evidently, is he continues to embrace it, step into it, steward it well. And I don't know about you, and I don't want the familiarity of the story to make me not think about it. This is actually mind-boggling for me. Even if you were given more responsibility in prison, would you step into that? Why would you step into that? Look what just happened when you were given responsibility and influence. You stepped into that, and what did it get you? Prison! So now you're in prison? You want some more responsibility? I think I'm good. I think I just want to be a prisoner. I'll hang out on the yard with the guys. Very Jerry Seinfeld. I heard it. I heard it right there. I heard it. You were thinking it. I heard it. I was just going to call it out. It's really not the point, but I've got the cold, and so. You've already been burned. I don't want to do more. But Joseph is so fascinating to me. He leans in. And he takes the responsibility. And the Lord was with him in prison and shows him his steadfast love for him in prison. And Joseph keeps right on stepping into leadership, and he keeps stepping into influence even in the midst of prison, even in the hard places, even in the difficult places. Because here's the thing. When God is your focus, he actually does become the lens through which you see your circumstances, as opposed to your circumstances being your lens through which you see God. There's two ways to navigate life. We all have circumstances. Everybody's got them. The question is your lens through which you see your circumstances, God and his word to you, or is it the actual circumstance? And it really matters. You may go, well, why does that matter? Because one of those focuses allows you to continue to live on mission with God and lean into him even in the hard seasons, while the other will lead you to question if there even is a God. Now, I have a front row seat oftentimes of counseling different people and that sort of thing, and I'm regularly in rooms where I'm observing and watching people continue to walk with them where they're actually leaning both ways on that. Some are following and leaning into the Lord in the midst of difficulty, and others are going, I'm not interested in that. And you can easily see which focus Joseph is operating from as we go into chapter 40. Sometime after this, it says in chapter 40, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in his custody. So we'll hit pause there for a second. Joseph's in prison. He gets some guests. Pharaoh is angry with a few of his employees, and he puts them in prison. One's the cupbearer. The other's the baker. Last weekend, we had our leadership retreat up in Asheville, and I took some time during one of the sessions, and I walked through some of the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, also cupbearer to the king. It's a really important job, very important. Some would equate it to a current day, like chief of staff to the president. You have constant access to the leader, and there has to be trust between the two of you. There has to be trust between the cupbearer and the king. Evidently, back in the day, people were really trying to poison kings and pharaohs so much that it was a full-time job of tasting the food and drink of the leader, so that just in case the food or drink had been poisoned, this person dies instead of the king or the pharaoh, which is just a very interesting job. And then the baker, obviously, a little more self-explanatory job description, but basically you have the two people who are responsible for Pharaoh's food and drink, and they have fallen out of favor with Pharaoh, and they find themselves in prison. And it says that Joseph cares for them. It says that Joseph attended to them, were in his custody. Mind you, also, because it says here, Joseph's also still in custody. So he's in custody. These guys come, and he's going to care for them. And it says this in verse 5. One night, they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker, of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretations. Verse 6 says, when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? And they said to him, we've had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. So a guy who was wrongfully imprisoned after being sold into slavery by his own family does what? He notices the countenance of others and offers to help them and serve them. Good grief, that was incredibly convicting for me as I was processing and studying this week. Hey guys, why so sad? Who had every reason to be sad? Joseph. Who has been through difficulty and is still currently in difficult times and is determined to walk with others and help others? Who is currently literally in a dungeon? Not figuratively. Literally in the midst of being in a dungeon and looks at other people in the dungeon and says, how can I help you? Why are you so sad today? I notice your countenance is down. How can I help you? How can I serve you? That's crazy. You think he would be super shy about jumping in, but like verse 9, right? He goes, how can I help you? Oh, dreams? Yeah, those interpret. Yep. Those belong to God. Tell me about your dreams. Verse 9 says, so the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, shot forth, and the cluster ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And then Joseph said to him, this is his interpretation. The three branches are 3 days, and in 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Verse 14, he says, only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. So he listens to this guy's dream. He goes, hey, I'm going to tell you what it means, but also if you don't mind, tell him about me who told you about the dream. Verse 15 says, he's Joseph's still acknowledging what went down, right? For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I've done nothing that they should put me into the pit. So I've been wronged, and then I've been wronged again. I got a lot of things that are not going well. Verse 16 says, when the chief baker saw the interpretation was favorable, and he's like, okay, this is good. Let me tell you about my dream. I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, well, this interpretation, the three baskets are 3 days, and in 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. Verse 20 says, on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all of his servants, lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. Verse 21 says, he restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted it to them. Whoa. There's a whole lot there. It appears, obviously, I don't have to explain all the dreams because Joseph does a fantastic job of interpreting the dreams, which come true just like he interpreted them, which is really good news for one of the fellas and really not great news for another one of the fellas, right? The cupbearer is restored to his position of influence with Pharaoh, and the baker's killed. But I mentioned it a moment ago, I want to come back to it for just a second. Not lost on you or on me as you read through this was the request of Joseph to the cupbearer. Hey, don't forget about me. I know I'm interpreting this, but God's the one who gives interpretation. So I just don't want you to let Pharaoh know about me. The one person who could help him get out, from his perspective, the one person who could help him get out of the spot that he's in is actually Pharaoh, yeah? But verse 23 says what? Continue on with the... Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. You can read a little bit further. We're going to talk about it next week, but I just to make the point here, I think it's important. Chapter 41, verse 1. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh had a dream. 2 more years. 2 more years. It is currently February of 2020. So go back. February of 2018. Like, we're talking real days, real time, right? Real months, real years. 2 whole years later, he told him the dream. It came true. He gets restored to his spot. Wouldn't he go, well, you're not going to believe this, Pharaoh, but someone told me exactly how this was going to play out. I mean, you want to talk about the temptation of being discouraged and disappointed, self-pity. Here you are in a tough spot because of no, zero fault of your own. You are faithful, serving and doing your best in Potiphar's home. And now you're in a tougher spot because of no fault of your own. You're faithful, and now you're in the prison, and you're faithful in the dungeon, and you serve other people, and you minister to other people. Nothing. I've made this point. I want to continue to make it as we go throughout the series because I think it's important. I don't think you're Joseph, and I'm not Joseph. That is definitely not the point of the series. But I do believe that there are some, there's some of you here today, or maybe people you're currently doing life with, and what we're processing and talking about this morning, it resonates with you. Because if you're honest, you have a tendency, maybe at times, maybe all the time, maybe sometimes, you have a tendency to look at the circumstances of life, and based on those circumstances, there's a temptation. I'm not saying you always give in to the temptation. There is a temptation to make determinations about the nearness of the Lord and whether or not he is actually paying attention to your current state. For some of you in the room, the temptation is to doubt his goodness and to doubt his love for you because you're in a tough spot. And honestly, what you can say is, I'm in a tough spot, no fault of my own. Some of you, you're tired of doing the right thing. You're tired of doing the selfless thing. You're tired of investing in others in the midst of your own pain and in the midst of your own suffering. And I just, there were just two, as I was processing through this week, there were just two things that I wanted to encourage you with. We'll be done. Here's the first. I want to encourage you to remember who has remembered you. I want to encourage you as your pastor and friend, in the midst of what you're walking through that is difficult and hard, to remember who has remembered you. Around Summit, we often talk about how our view of God is incredibly important. And it is essential that it is grounded in what scriptures say. The scriptures say. Contrary to popular opinion in our culture, he is not your genie in a bottle. He is not your heavenly piñata. He actually, you ready for this? He's not most interested in your comfort. But he is very interested in being your comfort in the midst of what you're walking through. There's a difference. He's not interested in making life comfortable for you. He is very interested in being your comfort in the midst of what you're walking through. Sometimes I believe it's easy to convince ourselves that everyone other than us understands all that's going on with their life. Yeah? Do you think that sometimes you kind of look around at everybody else and go, I'm the only one. I'm the only one in the dark. I am the only one that has no idea what's going on. I'm the only one that's confused. I'm the only one that's waiting. You know, on one hand, the Lord in his kindness, he made us to know and understand, right? We have a, as humans, we have a mental capacity unlike any other created thing. And so part of how we're wired is to attempt to figure things out. Paul Tripp, an author that I reference every now and then, says it this way, and I thought it was pretty good. He said, we spend much of our daily mental time trying to figure things out. We don't live by instinct. We don't leave our lives alone. We're all theologians. We're all philosophers. We're all archaeologists who dig into the mounds of our lives to try to make sense of the civilization that is our story. I like how he put that. And yeah, that is part of how we're made, but just like all things that sin has jacked up, we're tempted to think that we can't actually figure it all out. And that if we could just figure it all out, there would be security in that. But I lovingly want to remind you today, and you know it to be true, so it's just another voice to encourage you in the midst of it. You can't figure it out. You won't figure it all out. And true rest is never found in figuring all out or attempting to figure it all out. Rest is found in remembering who has remembered you. Therefore, you don't have to have all the answers because you actually have the answer in Christ. And I know you wouldn't sign up for the hardships, and I know you wouldn't sign up for the difficulty. I know you wouldn't sign up for the dungeon moments of life. But just as a reminder for you this morning, I like how C.S. Lewis puts it in his book, The Problem of Pain. He says, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our conscience, but shouts to us in our pains. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our conscience, but shouts to us in our pains. He has not forgotten you. Maybe one of the ways I thought, I just wrote it for myself in my notes. The way it was phrased there, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him his steadfast love. I just wrote in my notes, and you feel free to do the same for yourself, because I think these are the kind of reminders that we need. But the Lord was with Jason and showed him his steadfast love through Jesus. But the Lord was with Jason and showed him his steadfast love through Jesus. For some of you today, I think that's the deal, right? You need to be reminded that he's with you and he has shown you his steadfast love. Remember who has remembered you. And the other thing I just jotted down is be faithful to do what the Lord has called you to do. The results and the outcomes are his to determine. Now that can sound overly simplistic, but it actually comes from the first one. When you remember who has remembered you, you can live in this place. When you remember who has remembered you, you can live in the place of being faithful to do what the Lord has called you to do. The results and the outcomes of being faithful to what he has called you to do are actually his to determine. We've said it several times, his sovereign hand is at work. Remember who has remembered you. Be faithful to do what the Lord has called you to do. The results and the outcomes are his to determine. I close by saying this to all of us collectively as a church here at Summit. excuse me. We need to be this reminder to each other. The fact of the matter is, not everybody in this room is currently in a tough spot. Not everybody in this room is currently struggling to believe in the goodness of God, his care for you, or his love for you. Guess what? There are others in this season, in this moment, that are struggling with that, and they need you to speak truth into their lives about what is true. That's a piece of what it means for us to be the church together. They need you to walk with them. They need you to allow them to lean on you. They need you to listen to them. They need you to pray for them. They need you to encourage them with words from Scripture as the Holy Spirit leads you to offer encouragement and truth that is from him. And that is one of the reasons that it isn't so important that our community life here at Summit is more than Sunday mornings, sitting in a row, staring at the back of somebody's head, walking back out the door to do our own thing. It is one of the reasons we lovingly always look at everybody and go, please, would you get in community here? Like, would you actually get into a smaller group with a group of people who will walk with you and love you? Some of you would look back at me and go, well, Jason, I'm pretty good. Like, I've got those people. You're missing the point. People need those people. Does that make sense? You could be this voice into the lives of people who need to be reminded of the Lord's care for them. Even if that's currently not where you are. But what do you know about life? You will be there. You've been there. You'll be there again. And you need people who are saying that to you. And there's a multitude of groups that meet. This isn't a programming reminder. We got people getting together and studying the Bible together. I got another text this past week of a group of ladies going to be getting together on Thursday night to work through the book of Colossians. I love it. Like, there's all kind of avenues available to, like, step into some community and be a voice of encouragement into the lives of people and allow people to be a voice of encouragement into your life as you need that. Remember who has remembered you. Be faithful to do what the Lord has called you to do. Let the results, the outcomes be his to determine, and then be the church. Be biblical community to those that are around you. Step into that. Be that word of encouragement. That's my encouragement for us this morning. As we leave Joseph, still sitting in prison for a couple more years, but the dreams aren't done. Come back next week, because finally, interestingly, things are going to start to turn a little bit. The Lord's up to some pretty interesting things.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.